Welcome to Indie Radio Garden. This week's highlights are from community radio in the Philadelphia region.
This program brings ordinary citizens to the air to discuss issues related to health, race, safety, workers' rights, and the will to survive in pandemic times.
This week, we have audios from WRLGLP 92.9 Germantown Live Enrichment Center. The program is called G-Town Porch Talk. This week's G-Town Porch Talk focuses on a father of more than 90 years of age and his daughter. The conversation they have is a moving one about daily life in the neighborhood.
From Germantown Community Radio, WRLGLP, in Northwest Philadelphia, we bring you a conversation between a daughter and her 95-year-old father, sitting on the porch in Germantown, talking about childhood in the 1920s, family life, family love, family conflict, the things we remember all our lives, the things that are important, a little bit of gossip, the things people sit on the porch and talk about while their next door neighbor is repairing the roof and others walk by and say hi. Life in Germantown.
All the kids our age, I was here, maybe 6 or 7 months older than the oldest kid. So whenever we started a game, I was always asked to pick with somebody else, pick sides. So I'd always pick my brother first. My brother said, don't pick me first, pick me last, because then you can get the good players first. I says, if I don't pick you first, then wait till last. And that is not even men. There's only 21 men, and you've got 10 apiece. There's one left over. You happen to be that one. You don't play. You know what Mama does to me when I go home and you didn't play? It's not worth it. It's worth having a lousy team and losing. Just when we went home, first thing my mother would say to my brother, did you have a good time? And he'd say, yeah, you know. And if he didn't play, he'd say, well, I couldn't play. She'd say, well, why couldn't you play? So there wasn't enough kids. We didn't. So my mother said, why didn't your brother pick you first? So from that time on, I picked them first. And everyone get smacked in the head.
What did you used to play? What was the main game?
We used to play handball. They should put him in the outfield. I said, put him so far away, like two blocks away. And he'd say, didn't they hit the ball? Yes. Good. Then you'd have a chance to catch one.
You played it against the wall, right? You slammed the ball against the wall, right?
No, you hit the ball with your hand.
Yeah.
Then you'd run base.
Oh, you hit it with the hand, to just like baseball? The kids would be out in the outfield?
Just like baseball.
Oh, okay.
Instead of using a bat, you use your hand.
Oh, okay. You use those pink balls?
Yeah, you use those high bouncing balls.
You know? Yeah.
You hit them with a stick, you hit them a mile away. My father used to come and watch the game right from the very beginning. Sometimes you hit that ball so hard, you hit him up on the roof of the house. He gives another 15 cents to buy another ball. We never ran out of balls. After the game was over, the kids that could climb would climb up on the roof, get all the balls that we knocked up there. Sometimes it'd be 10 balls.
We used to collect balls on Mr. Sherry's roof, remember? Remember the kids always wanted to climb out our window, go on Mr. Sherry's roof to get those balls?
I never had to worry about the balls. My father could buy them anytime I wanted them.
He made you the big shot that you were.
The kids I played with, I was always the best player. None of them were good players.
It's probably because you weren't playing with Mommy.
And when I went to high school, I didn't play with them anymore. So I'm too old for you guys. And I used to go by number 6 school. Broadway and 18th Street, you know, where the school was. And the good players would go up there, of course you could hit the ball far. I'd go play up there, and Daddy would come up there and watch me.
Was that in those times there wasn't that much traffic, you could take over the whole street.
Oh yeah, there was not much traffic on Sunday, Saturday. When I went to high school, he used to come. Saturdays and Sundays used to come down and watch us practice. He'd go to tell the coach to put me in. He said, "Wouldn't let him sit on the bench, for he's the best one you got." He said, "Daddy, don't tell him anything like that." He said, "Well, I want to wake him up." And the coach used to tell me, "Your father likes you, you know that? That's what doesn't your father like you?" But you were in high school when we had that McGrath still teaching.
There was a McGrath, but I don't know.
Had a mustache.
No, I think it might have been his son. There was another McGrath, but there was a female named McGrath.
There was what?
It was a female teacher. I never had her. I think she taught math.
Oh, no, this is a man.
Yeah, I never had it. I had Miss Griscom. You had her, right?
Yeah.
She must have been a child when you had her.
She's one of the few teachers that liked me.
Oh, yeah? She liked everybody then. Yeah. Yeah, the other teachers didn't like you?
No, because I was a troublemaker.
Really?
I used to talk too much. When the teacher was talking, I talked to somebody. Teacher was quiet. 5 minutes later, I started talking again.
Oh, you were a troublemaker. But why did Miss Griscom like you if you would talk so much? She liked what you said, or what?
Well, that was my best subject, was math.
You had Miss Griscom for math?
What?
You had Miss Griscom for math? Oh, well, she didn't teach math when I was there.
What did she teach?
She taught English, yeah. And languages.
Yeah, she taught English and math when I was there.
She was pretty smart.
She was a nice lady. I can't remember her much anymore.
She had long hair.
Yeah.
Used to wear a little flower in her hair.
Yeah, that's
she
right.
She used to wear a bow. And a little flower on a dress on the side.
She was very young when she came to teach when I was there.
She went to Bryn Mawr College.
Where'd she win more?
Bryn Mawr, where Laurel went.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. She played the piano.
I didn't know much about her except she liked me. A bowl of fits she liked me. The others couldn't wait till I could get out of the class.
I think Miss Griscom liked everybody.
Yeah, she did like a lot of people, more so than anybody else.
She was a Quaker, you know.
She was a Quaker?
Yep.
I know that.
That was one reason she wore her dresses were very long. She wore the dresses like they wore in 1910, down to her ankles. Big wide skirt. She was little. She was petite.
I don't remember that.
She had big blue eyes.
Yeah, she had nice eyes.
She must have had blonde hair when she was young. And she used to know, you know who she was, her friend? Jacqueline Bouvier's family.
Who?
Jacqueline Kennedy. Jacqueline Kennedy's family. Some way she knew the Bouvier family.
Oh.
She went to school with one of them. And there was always a story that she had was married. And her husband left her. He was rich and he dumped her. That was the story. Never got all the details, but that was the story.
Who do girls want to know those stories?
The boys never cared about those stories.
We never went around and asked.
Well, Mommy told me it, so she got it.
Mommy always treated getting divorced as a horrible thing. She always thought that. She says, boy, if you can't get along when you're married, why'd you get married?
You never told that to Uncle Steve, huh?
Boy, him and Aunt Jean used to have some shouting battles. You remember how they used to shout at each other?
Yeah. But I think they actually got along their own little way.
When he was old, he was ready to. He was sick, and the doctor told him he was going to die soon, in a couple of months. He called me, and he asked me that he'd like me to do him a favor. So I says, all right. He says, you know, before Mama died, she had you and me hold hands, and she said that you should take care of each other. You said to Mama, I can't take care of her. I shouldn't take care of him. He has a lot of money and I have nothing. How can I take care of him? So Mama said, no matter how much money he has, no matter what he does, you have to take care of him. So I says, I can't do that. So she said to my brother, you tell me now that you're going to let your brother take care of you. My brother says, who else can take care of me but Salvi? I need him to take care of me. So she said to me, you hear what your brother said? I said, yeah, I heard it. She says, well, grab his hand and shake hands with me. So the two was put in like that. Now he called me up and he says, you remember Mama made us take a pact that you'd take care of me? So I said, yeah, sure I remember. He says, well, I don't think you have to take care of me much more. I said, why? Because I'm going to die soon. You'll live to be 150. He says, no, I know I'm going to die soon. But what I want you to do is say my obituary when I die. Because you're going to be, you're not going to die before me. As you talk like you're the Lord. He says, no, I'm not the Lord, but I know some things. I know that you're not going to die before me. So I said, okay. He said, but I want you to say my obituary. I said, you had two daughters, and Stephanie's a college graduate. I said, you don't need me to, she can do a fine job. I want you to say it. I said, why? Because I want you to say something that's so important to me. What's so important to you? I want you to say in my obituary that the happiest day in my life is the day that I married Jane. You want me to say that? He said, yeah. I said, I'll never say that. He said, why won't you say that? Because that's a lie. When she came to this family, you got married, you ruined the family. We were never happy from the time you got married. We were always arguing. Mama, you and Daddy, me. He says, yeah, but we're all good friends. Mama is a sucker. Mama was always the one that had to make peace. Mama hated confrontation. She said to me, please, please don't argue.
You're talking about Marie, not your mother. You're talking about your wife.
Yeah.
Your mother likes confrontations.
Oh, yes. Because her side was always win.
She didn't win against Jane.
No, because she used to give in to Jane. Because she figured, she used to tell me this, that if Jane gets mad, she'll make Stevie move away. And our family will be broken up. I said, Mom, we'll be happy if he moves away. She says, No, we won't. Families disband, they're never happy. She says, you got got to be together. That was her belief.
From the WPEB 88.1 Scribe Radio New Community Journalists Project, this week we have Jackie Milestone, who will be talking to Frances Cordelia Beaver, who's a storyteller, who will talk about gender identity.
I'm Frances Cordelia Beaver, and I'm a artist, educator, storyteller, musician, performer person, born and raised in Delco and living, working in Philadelphia for like the past 13 years or so. My work mostly stems from storytelling. So at the very basis of everything that I do is a story, oftentimes taking the form of sort of like a folklore or contemporary mythology, and then expanding out into taking the form of music or performance or film or right now a comic book or animation. It's whatever form I feel like the story needs to take, but also whatever form I feel like learning about. So like the story takes the life of a form based off of like what I find interesting, a new skill I learned, and whether or not there's a pandemic.
So I know from knowing some of your work that a lot of the storytelling and myth like weaves in these identities of gender and like a gender journey. And yeah, wondering if you could talk a little bit about that and why that has felt like important or interesting or useful to you.
Totally. So I would say I spent years questioning my gender, or really just not questioning like what my gender was, but trying to find my sort of cosmic relationship to femininity before I ended up actually like coming out to everyone and transitioning socially and medically. And so that time period is where most of this really my interest in folklorology and mythology comes from, because I think that what I would now call dysphoria, I don't know what I would have called it back then, really felt supernatural. And I spent a long time trying to figure out why were people trans? Why was I thinking about the things that I was thinking? And why was I not doing anything about it? And I, because I was not doing anything about it, I had to find something to do with it. And so a lot of my artwork and storytelling around my mid-20s or so was about trying to figure out sort of like where gender comes from, or like not even that explicit, but like what to do with alternative selves, really. It's just like, what were stories that people morphed into other things, or like what were different ways that we could explore having multiple versions of ourselves, or like what even the self was comprised of specifically, like a sort of cache of behaviors and clothing and memories and anatomy and language and all these different things. And so most of that came from that time, because I didn't know how to explore it, I guess, in any other way besides kind of magical or folklorish.
Yeah, I've been thinking about that, how sometimes telling a story or accessing something through a creative space can feel so much easier than like interrogating yourself directly.
It's definitely easier, and that's why I did it for so long. But I got really into like personas and like splitting yourself into like other versions of yourself and sort of inhabiting those for a little while. And so I was doing persona work as this sort of pan-dimensional supernatural pop star character called Frances Dauphine. And that was like created explicitly so that I could experiment with femininity in myself in front of other people without having to answer any awkward questions or like committing to anything. And like, you're definitely right in that it's easier to go a sort of art direction or story direction when you're thinking of these things, because exploding your life and then putting it back together is a really long process and it's really difficult. I've been very fortunate with it, but it's a huge thing. But there is a tipping point that I know that I hit, which is that I realized that art, it's not real life, and that it's not enough. And so I retired the Frances Dauphine character and transitioned.
Yeah, that's so sick. I don't know, as another person on a gender journey, like I wish that was more of a narrative that we were told of, like tell stories about yourself and like use creativity and use art to explore, because it does feel like such a safe space starting out.
It literally is a safer space than experimenting. I mean, there's this weird, like, I feel like we are in this sort of great wokening where like people are accepting trans people into the mainstream, and that's mostly through culture and then into people's actual families and experiences. But I definitely think that we're at this moment where, like, the actual transitioning and exploration of being trans, or like a trans or a gender fluid or like just non-cis identity before coming out, is not something we understand or something that anybody tells stories about.
Marcelo Jauregui interviews Lisa Volpe. Lisa is a teacher who will talk about the COVID-19 vaccine and her school's reopening.
Do you know how many of the teachers in your school have been vaccinated so far?
I believe half of the teachers have had both vaccinations. And I believe there is a quarter of the teachers that have had their first vaccination. And we do have a population of teachers that do not want to get vaccinated yet.
And why is that?
They're saying they're not sure of the effects of the vaccination because they don't trust the government. They don't trust the research doctors and scientists that made the vaccination. And they want to wait and see after someone is fully vaccinated, how they will feel or what will happen to them within the months following their second vaccination.
And has there been a response from the administration to those teachers?
We have been told that this is confidential information and no one will know who has been vaccinated or not been vaccinated.
Have you gotten vaccinated?
Yes, I am fully vaccinated by the Pfizer vaccine now.
Is there a chance you'll be going back to school soon?
Probably not until the fall.
Are you excited to go back?
I'm excited to see the students, but I am apprehensive about, will the school be able to provide enough PPE as well as the deep cleaning that needs to happen on a daily basis?
Your school is a charter school, right?
Correct.
Is there a difference between sort of charter schools and public schools when it comes to funding for cleanup and sanitizing and things like that?
Yes, there is a difference. Public schools get 100% of their funding from the federal or local governments. But a charter school only gets 75% of their funding from the federal or local government. The other 25%, we have to search for grants and other independent and private funding. And that's where it gets tricky because I'm not completely confident they can keep up this pace of providing PPE for the teachers and making all of the classrooms safe when there are several classes at a time in the building.
And have you spoken at all to your other colleagues that are back?
Today is the first day back. And I did this morning, after an hour of the school opening, have a phone conversation with one of those teachers. And she said it was actually very chaotic because the procedure that the CDC recommends is before someone enters the building, they have to fill out a Google form with general health information. And not only for the students, but the teachers, you'll get a backlog of people entering the building and keeping the 6 feet separation, plus getting, you have to clean up, clean the area, clean the thermometer after each student enters. It's quite a laborious task and can be very stressful.
Is there recess going on right now at the school?
Yes, there is recess going on right now at the school. But that's another very stressful moment for teachers and administrators, because to keep everyone 6 feet apart is very challenging. When one group goes out and then that group goes in before the next group goes onto the playground, somebody has to clean all of those surfaces with this special cleaning detergent. And that's when it gets very stressful. And we have hired more cleaning staff, but they may not be available at the moment. So at the last minute, the classroom teacher has to find someone else to watch his or her class so they can go out and clean all of those surfaces. So it's going to get really, really tricky.
And so is there a pod system in place with the students?
Yes, there's a very strict pod system where each teacher can only be with their pod in a day, and there cannot be any crossing over. So in terms of recess, only one pod can be outside at a time. And that as well is a very tedious schedule for teachers because we can't even be in the hallway at the same time. So it's a very careful and cautious schedule that we have to keep.
Rob Grace interviews his daughter, Neva Grace, about social justice and racial discrimination.
The kids are listening. We've been talking about social justice much more as a country than we have in a long time. And the kids are around. This is Rob Grace. I'd like to talk with Neva Grace about just this issue. Neva, could you say what grade you're in?
Fifth.
At what school?
Rydell East.
Which is where?
In Huntington Valley.
And we moved last year from where?
Philadelphia.
So I remember you coming home shortly after George Floyd was killed by police, and you had talked in class that day. Well, actually, it was on Zoom, mm-hmm. So we were able to see what your teacher, Mr. Peach, had to say about it.
Well, at the time, it kind of felt weird because none of the teachers had ever really talked about racism or talked about anything happening like that. So, especially now, because I never lived through any racism in my life, like, I never lived through any big stuff like that. So it was kind of weird to hear him talk about it, but I was, at the same time, glad that they were talking about it instead of totally ignoring it.
Did you and your classmates talk about it before or after Mr. Peach did?
No. Actually, well, I think he was killed on a Friday, so we went to school on Monday and talked about it, and so I didn't have any contact with my friends, so we didn't really talk about it before that. And so, no, we didn't really talk about it before that, because he really got into it instantly.
And I think I remember you saying he seemed personally pretty upset.
Yeah, he wasn't. I think that he wasn't, like, really upset, but he was, I think he wanted, like, this to be a serious talk with us, and he didn't, like, want anyone joking around or anything. He wanted everyone their videos on, so they could show that this was an important thing. And I think it was an important thing to discuss, and I think he was disappointed about this. He was upset about this, but he wasn't, like, showing it to the class. He wasn't, like, weeping.
Before that happened, had you or your classmates or Mr. Peach talked about racism at all?
We would talk about, like, in social studies, immigration and stuff like that. But they never really dove into, like, racism. They never really spoke much about that. So after this, I actually noticed a change, and they started talking more about it to us, and I liked that.
In your new school, it's been mostly online.
Yeah.
There hasn't been a big event like that, like the protest last summer. But yeah. How is it different? How is it the same? How are your teachers talking about these sorts of things?
Okay, well, honestly, I found at Rydell, actually, they were talking a lot more about it at Rydell. They were, like, every day we talk about immigration and slaves and things like that, and we dive really into, like, Black history and stuff, and so a lot more than we did ever at St. Helena, and so that's pretty cool.
And I remember at St. Helena in Philly, you had a lot of people that were immigrants themselves or their parents had immigrated.
Yeah.
What's your sense of the new school? How does that compare? Are there more kids, less kids?
There are less kids because we're in a smaller community because a lot of people are virtual. It's a bit of a smaller community, and I think I get along better with them because it is a smaller community.
But is there anything your teacher has ever said or done that you thought you didn't agree with or you would have done differently as a teacher about an issue like this, about immigration or racism or police brutality?
Honestly, no, because our teachers are really open about this, and, like, all the reasons they make are really good. They don't try to make people who are racist sound good. They don't try to do that. They are really opening up about it, and there's not really anything I disagreed about how they're teaching this to us, because they're teaching it to us really good.
Well, sounds like they're off to a good start.
Yeah.
And you're off to a good start too. I'm proud of you.
Thank you.
Thank you for being with us. I'm Janet Etze, host of Wake Up Call from Germantown Community Radio, 92.9 FM WGGTLP Philadelphia. This has been Indie Radio Garden.